before I spoke to you, I meditated, or actually after I spoke to you, on what might be the most important thing in terms of to convey in the interview. And what was given to me was this: ask him to tell the truth of what is happening as clearly and as explicitly as possible, and show the larger frame of it, put in its place in the whole perspective, that is to say, put in its context, this larger picture, the events of 8/16/87. And so I thought that might be a place to start.
Okay. Well, as far as the telling the truth of what is actually happening, we're witnessing right now what I referred to in my 1975 book, The Transformative Vision, as the climax of matter. And that can be taken on several different levels. But one level is that this is the climax of a civilization that has been based upon materialism, upon the notion of matter as being the ultimate reality, which gives birth to a civilization of materialism. And this civilization has developed over the last 200 to 300 years in disregard of the earth as a living organism, so that a great gulf or split has occurred between the human realm and the planetary realm, which the planetary realm includes many different levels, from the actual gravitational and harmonic field of the planet, inclusive of the biosphere and of the electromagnetic fields.
Mm-hmm.
So we have developed in disregard that all of this is a single organism, and it's due to that disregard that what we are experiencing at this moment, this climax of matter, is actually the peak and the denouement of materialist civilization. And what we are passing through, and which will become totally acute and critical at the August 16th and 17th dates, is the shifting of the field from one mental house, the mental house of materialism, to a new mental house, one which the totality of the planetary system is once again regarded as the total base of our operations as human beings, and eventually the understanding that this planetary system, our Earth, not only is a part of the solar system as a total organic system, but as a part of a larger galactic unfolding.
Mm-hmm.
So that's basically what's happening. The dissonance, the climate of terror, and the dissonance and the dissipation of the social structures, and the uncertainty that are so widespread at this time, are all symptomatic of the inability of materialist civilization to support itself any longer because of the great gulf it has created between itself and the Earth as a total living system.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying, in a sense, that we have in this stage of development, which was a necessary stage of development, but just the same, forgotten that we are in fact one organism.
That's absolutely
correct. And that we are a part of it.
Right, that humanity is a single organism, and that this organism itself is an evolving part of the evolving planetary organism.
Mm-hmm. Could you, along those lines, I was reviewing again Earth Ascending, and I noticed, I was thinking in terms of putting this date in context, you spoke about the holonomic equation and the five stages,
yes,
of development. And I'm thinking that for readers it might be interesting to have a sense of the larger picture within which this particular date and then this phase of our development sits.
Okay. In terms of Earth ascending and the holonomic equation, we have passed, what we're doing is we're reaching the climax of the third phase. The first phase is, of course, nature presents itself. The second is man learns from nature. The third phase, man transforms nature, refers to the cycle of civilization, which began around 3000 or 3100 BC by the Mayan calendar,
mm-hmm.
and continues up to this moment here. And we are now entering the fourth phase, which is very brief, which is nature evaluates man's transformation.
Mm-hmm.
And this evaluation of man's transformation is nature evaluating history, as it were, or nature evaluating civilization as it has come to be. And this fourth phase, as I mentioned, is quite brief and is referred to in many of the at least Native American prophetic traditions as the stage of the purification. And this, according to the Mayan calendar harmonics, this fourth phase will last between 1987 and 1992. And at that point there, then we will enter the fifth phase, which is man and nature synthesized, that we will understand that we cannot operate under the belief that we are separate from or superior to nature, but that we are part of a large symbiotic relationship with the total planetary environment.
Mm-hmm. So this marks the official entering into what amounts to a 5-year purification stage.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly.
Okay, because one of the things that was most striking about Earth ascending is that, as I read it, I really saw it, as you put it, as a systems approach to the relationship of the Earth as a unitary living being to the other planets and the sun in the solar system, and then, of course, ultimately, the relationship of our solar system to the other six that are part of a still larger being.
Yes. The larger galactic organism.
Yes. And it's curious, or probably not curious, that reflects quite exactly the teachings of D.K., the Tibetan,
uh-huh.
that we are one of seven solar systems said uh-huh. to be the heart center of uh-huh. a great cosmic being.
Yeah, well, curious, and then I think not so curious, because I believe that if we remain with our integrity and are able to operate in a non-egoic manner, that the information that we receive then is really the same information.
Absolutely. It was very pleasing, though, to notice this, the further synchronizations that are obviously all a part of this work at this time. So now, can you say a little more now about, you talked about this in the Crystal Earth papers, but I think for readers this might be of interest as well, about how this August 16th and 17th date was arrived at, and something about the Mayan calendar.
Okay. The August 16th and 17th date most specifically comes about from the ancient Mexican prophecies and calendrical system that relate to the Mexican avatar Quetzalcoatl.
Mm-hmm.
It was predicted by the 10th century Quetzalcoatl, who departed from Mexico in 999 AD, that he would return on the day one read in the year one read.
Mm-hmm.
There were two this date appears at two critical points. One of them on Good Friday, 1519,
mm-hmm.
When Cortez landed in Mexico, and of course that was very that unstrung ancient Mexican civilization, Aztec civilization at that time, because they knew that this was the prophetic date, and when Cortez landed, it was completely unnerving, and the sense was at first was this Quetzalcoatl, which obviously it wasn't. And then what that date signified was the beginning point of a period of 9 52-year, what are called 9 52-year hell cycles, which culminate on August 16th, 1987. Incidentally, Tony Shearer, S-H-E-A-R-E-R, I think is the man who, he's the man who brought this information to my attention back around 1970. Mm-hmm. Now, in the context of the Mayan calendrical system, of which the Mexican calendar and the prophecies of Quetzalcoatl are, you might say, a subsystem of the larger Mayan calendar system, in that system, we are operating within the framework of a great cycle that runs from 3113 BC to 2012 AD. In my book, The Mayan Factor, this great cycle is described actually as a particular kind of galactic beam through which the planet passes. It's a beam that's 5,125 mm-hmm. years in diameter. So we're in 2012, we pass out of this beam and pass into a larger phase, a galactic synchronization phase. So in the light of this beam, the 1987 day, August 16th, 1987, marks a, I'll go back a second. Within the context of this beam from 3113 BC to 2012 AD, this beam encompasses the whole process of the spread of civilization as we know it around the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can view the spread of civilization around the planet from 3113 BC up to the present moment as a wave.
Yes.
You know, actually, it's a wave harmonic.
Mm-hmm.
And the dates August 16th and 17th mark the point at which this wave peaks. It's like when you watch a wave breaking on the ocean and then it crests. Well, this is the cresting of the wave. And actually, a new energy and a new momentum enters in precisely at that point. And the new energy and the new momentum is a renewed galactic type of energy that assists us in washing out to that 2012 point. The period between 1987 and 1992 is the point, once the wave breaks, then there's a crash, and then, in that crash, there's already the new momentum that carries us up to the 2012 date. And once we get past 1992, it will be very clear what has happened, and it will be very clear where we are going.
Mm-hmm. Because you had mentioned, I remember, that the Mayan calendar system was not based exclusively on events of this planet, but was in fact a synchronization, again, of this solar system with six other solar
systems.
Yes,
that's correct.
And that the December 21st, 2012 date marks the point where there's a major synchronization between the seven systems.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's what, in a way, it's like, to use Bucky's phrase, spaceship Earth. It's 2012 marks the point at which spaceship Earth is ready to join the galactic fleet.
Exactly.
So right now, from the point of view of the higher galactic intelligence, the Earth is almost ready to do that. The phenomenon and the possibility of a unified planetary or global consciousness is now present, but the scaffolding, as it were, which civilization represents, has to be taken down, so that the Earth is in a purified condition in order to be ready to join the fleet in 2012. And so it's this purification period that we're talking about, the 87 to 92, marks in which it becomes evident that the scaffolding has to be taken down, and that the basis of the final stage of this process between 92 and 2012 can take place. This if 87 to 92 is the purification phase, 92 to 2012 is the Earth regeneration phase.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned in one of the, I guess it's a harmonic convergence letter, about a campaign for the Earth whose function would be to help oversee, and it's a five-year plan, this initial purification phase.
Correct. And the idea of the campaign for the Earth would be this is a number of critical operations that are absolutely necessary, which the two chief ones that are of concern are the process of demilitarization, and very closely interwoven with that is the process of the ceasing to pollute the environment. At this point, the pollution of the environment is at a critical point, and the first task of the campaign for the Earth would be to destructure the old civilization in the sense of demilitarizing and beginning to see what needs to be implemented to make a switch over from polluting fossil fuel industry and economy to non-polluting types of technologies and economy. If you stop and consider that carefully, that's a very radical revolutionary shift that mm-hmm. we are about to be embarking, and it's a shift that we will see that our capacity as human beings, which has been very little utilized, will come to the fore, and that our abilities in terms of what is usually referred to as a parapsychological areas will become much more prominent, as will our relationship to the sun and our utilization of solar energy, and ultimately our understanding of the common resonance of solar and psychic frequencies.
Mm-hmm. Which is, again, part of, reminding ourselves that, in fact, we are part of a living organism, this living being that is incarnated in the Earth, and it itself is one of a group of such organisms with a relationship to a still larger one, the sun, that we are part of a larger living whole, and to remember what our place in it is, and to begin to almost scientifically chart those relationships, which is really what you started doing in Earth Ascending.
Correct. Absolutely correct. The Mayan factor, I refer to this final phase of the cycle that we're entering as the coming solar age, because it's going to, as I said, we're going to have a new understanding of ourselves, as you expressed it just a few minutes ago, and of our relationship to the galactic intelligences. See, the sun is the as a star with its planetary system. The sun is actually the mediator of galactic energy and galactic information.
Mm-hmm.
And when we begin to understand that that is actually so, and begin to see how that works, then we will be able to shift gears and develop a planetary civilization, if you could call it that, that has as its foundation the understanding that we are part of a galactic family.
Mm-hmm. Now, in terms of the practicalities of this, I think for many people it'll be a big jump from the actual physical event of August 16, 1987, to the realization of our galactic connection. Looking at this purification phase, is there, I guess, could you talk a little more in detail about how individuals, what they might do beginning, with the phase this summer? And also, is there a central coordinating network of some sort for this, or should local places set them up themselves? This is the question that a number of people were interested in.
Yeah. Okay. First of all, it's very important to understand that the preparation begins now, right the minute you hear about it.
Meaning today on Ash Wednesday, appropriately enough, 1987.
This is an excellent time. And the key factor in the preparation is a sense of surrender, okay, a surrender to the higher evolutionary purpose of the planet and surrender to the higher galactic intelligence which monitors this planet.
Mm-hmm.
And that sense of surrender obviously is an individual responsibility, but it is necessarily undertaken with other people. So we're talking about small group phenomenon, small cooperatives,
mm-hmm.
And the attitude by which to enter into the August 17th period, which is like a 2-day window in time,
mm-hmm.
is this one of surrender. Now, an important thing, once we hit that window, August 16th and 17th, is that through the surrender and through the quality of sublime receptivity, which we can cultivate, we will receive information, and we will be what the information will do is catalyze a new sense of vision, a new planetary vision, and a new sense of purpose. This is a very, very important point, because it's going to be this catalyzing that will prepare us then for the next phase, which is really the 5-year phase of purification. The group bonding that we do at this time will be even more essential and more important once we pass into, say, August 18th.
Mm-hmm.
We will, by the time we reach this window of time, August 16th and 17th, the information about this will be so pervasive that we will know that there is indeed a whole new foundation that has been established. Now, one of the chief means, there are two areas that are very critical for creating the communication matrix that will be necessary to pass through the 5-year purification period. One is the computer networks, I think, are very, very critical because they allow groups to be dispersed across the planet, decentralized, and at the same time to hook into common electronic bulletin boards. The other is the role of global media, television, and radio. There are a number of moves that are occurring right now that are attempting to establish global programming, that are working on further establishment of space bridges, and so on. These will be, again, very important, because what we'll be getting into once we hit the purification period has, on the one hand, a tremendous destabilization of
mm-hmm.
of the world social, political, economic structure that we know it, and on the other hand, along with that, a increasing decentralization, so that there's going to be much more emphasis on local autonomies and a highly renewed understanding of the necessity of cooperative economics that involve exchange, sharing, bartering at this level.
Mm-hmm.
So that's some of the kind of things that that one can begin to anticipate and look at a practical day-to-day type of level. From this process, one of the things that harmonic convergence represents is the intervention of the unexpected.
Mm-hmm.
And to a certain degree, we can't exactly say how that intervention of the unexpected is going to affect and catalyze the collective minefield of the planet, but we know it will, and we can anticipate that from that intervention of the unexpected, that there will be new understandings, new archetypal forms, or maybe old archetypal forms that will suddenly be saturated with new meaning that will allow us to find the modes and the means of communication and exchange that are necessary to do what we have to do. It may very well be that through this period, something of an information government, which I've referred to in the Crystal Earth papers as a mediarchy, will emerge that will help process the information, that will help assist in the demilitarization, that will help assist in the cleaning up of the planet, that will become paramount. In the first phase of the campaign for the Earth, it's important to look at that as a opportunity for a collective gathering of strength that is in some ways the equivalent of the marshalling of forces that say brought about World War II, but not for war, but for what nowadays we call peace.
Mm-hmm. Is there in that regard, Jose, I'm thinking of both the events this summer and the future events, is there some sort of coordinating network at this point? Would a lot of different groups set it up? Or?
There's a lot of different groups that are working on this now. We have a small coordinating group that is working on the information processing here in Boulder, but there are many different groups around the world. Part of what we're dealing with, and which is one of the lessons that humanity has to be learning at this moment, is the field of trust.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the old style is to think that there has to be a central control.
Mm-hmm.
And the field of trust doesn't operate that way. The field of trust operates knowing that this thing is in the field, it's resonating in the field, and that many groups are operating like this right now, and that we have to trust that we will all converge, harmonic convergence, that we'll all converge at that moment, and that what is necessary for the unfolding of the next phase will become apparent through the process of convergence, but it cannot necessarily be predicted from the point prior to actual convergence.
It just had occurred to us that it might be helpful if they were, you know, like a sort of networking list. It's not a matter of a central control, but a kind of, you know, networking coordination list, so that groups would be aware of other groups.
Okay. We are we're developing that right now. In fact, we're almost at the completion stage of it, and if people are interested, they should send a self-addressed stamped envelope to Harmonic Convergence,
mm-hmm.
Post Office Box 6111,
mm-hmm.
Boulder, Colorado 80306.
So people who are interested in becoming part of this network, or groups that want to be part of the network, might simply address it in this way.
Yes.
Okay, I think there'll be a lot of people and groups who will be very interested in plugging into this.
Right, right. If they could let us know who they are and if there's a particular kind of information they want, they could let us know and send us SASE.
Mm-hmm.
We'll take care of it.
Okay. Another thing along those lines, could you comment on the role of meditation in terms of group linking of the mental field as part of this process?
Well, as we know, we had one grand experiment so far on December 31st, and it's very important to continue the spirit and the momentum of the World Healing Day on December 31st. The significance of meditation can't be overemphasized.
Mm-hmm.
If we understand meditation as most basically and fundamentally being the ability to drop our outer garment, to drop our conceptions, to drop our desires, and to drop our strategies, so that we can enter into a state of nakedness and receptivity and, if you will, divine innocence, that is that is absolutely crucial in preparing for the harmonic convergence, because, as I mentioned earlier, the state of surrender and receptivity is of the utmost importance. Surrender, receptivity, and trust. And so, insofar as the many legitimate meditation techniques allow individual to get to that place of openness and surrender, of no nameness, and insofar as individuals can form into group alliances where they are able to get to that level of surrender and receptive no nameness, then that helps to create and strengthen this field of trust, the planetary field of trust, because it's this planetary field of trust which will then operate like a giant both receiving dish and antenna,
mm-hmm.
that then will be able to receive and utilize the release of energy and the transmissions that will be occurring in this window of time, August 16th, 17th, 1987.
So we then might, again, literally starting today on Ash Wednesday, invite individuals all over the planet in whatever their personal prayer or meditation practices to include in it, this resonance and this inner alignment with all the other individuals and groups.
Yes, that's very critical. The time to start is right now.
Mm-hmm.
And one other thing that occurred to me with that is that in asking individuals and groups through whatever appropriate form of prayer or meditation to do this, to also to create this field of resonance, to understand that we are creating a field where we are harmonizing our resonance with the resonant field of the Earth.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things, I'm very glad that you said that, Jose, because another thing that came to me as I pondered on, what to address to you was this. So let the Earth speak for itself and say what its needs are to man in terms of our making this relationship. So if you were to give the Earth a voice, Jose, what would it say to us now? What is this time in its life, and what part do we have to play in its evolution?
Okay. Well, if the Earth speaking for the Earth and speaking as the voice of the Earth is saying to us at this moment is that in the course of her evolution, that she has come now to the point where she is ready to become a full conscious organism participating in the larger, not only solar family, but in the larger galactic family, and that she has spent a long time preparing the different kingdoms of the Earth for this particular moment, and that the human kingdom at this point is the instrument that is being evolved by the Earth to be able to speak for the Earth, to be able to be sensitive for the Earth, on behalf of the Earth, to be able to speak and be sensitive to the larger galactic family.
Mm-hmm.
And so that it's very important that the humans understand how they are being instrumented by the Earth for this particular task.
So we as humanity represent one organism. In a sense, you referred in Earth Ascending as the membrane of the mental field of the Earth.
Yes.
That we are one organism that is, the sense, the mind of the Earth. And we need to tune in to that larger whole that is the Earth, and I guess look at our relation to the other planets and then to the still larger whole.
Right, and the key in our tuning into the Earth really is resonance, because the Earth is a resonating field. It's the Earth, like all planets, is a harmonic gyroscope, and it emanates its subtle resonances that are co-resonant with the other planetary members, as well as the Sun, as well as the other star systems. And so, again, the key is to understand the resonance of the earth, and again, the key to that is through, first of all, initially by a self-select group of humans doing this on behalf of the rest of humanity, and receiving the resonant transmissions that will be occurring on August 16th and 17th, and through that understanding the how important it is to be in resonance with oneself, with others, with the earth, with the stars.
Could you give an example of that, for instance, for this 12-day period preceding the dates in August? What are some things that an individual, or say a group of individuals, might do, practically speaking, to prepare?
Simple types of, depending upon, ideally if one can get out into a natural place, just something like doing a small retreat. You could do it in a camping out type of fashion, and just living very simply, eating very simply, spending a lot of time in quiet, and yet maintaining a sense of the group that you're with as a circle, which is held together by a fire at the center, and being very conscientious about simplifying to the greatest degree possible. I don't think it's necessary to you know, go into any, you know, great fasting or anything like that, but I think a sense of gathering together and encouraging one another to simplify from habits and addictions that keep us tied into civilization.
Mm-hmm. So it's a sense of, as you say, gathering together, and also of simplifying, getting back to the basics of who we are and what our lives are about.
Right.
And this will prepare us. It's really then not so much a matter of doing something new as clearing away what's in the way so that we can receive what is already there.
Absolutely.
And what are you yourself planning on doing during this time period?
Well, I'm not completely certain yet. My suspicion is that I will be here in the Rocky Mountains, and a very strong feeling that I will be at a Buddhist meditation center, the Rocky Mountain Dharma Center, which is in the Rockies north of Boulder here. That's what I feel probably will be my place.
Okay. And for people who are in the city or not in the position to take 12 days off, how can they meaningfully participate in the 12 days preceding this two-day event?
Well, I think, again, the key is, like, you know, for people who cannot leave their jobs or whatever, I think at the times that they are at home, to as much as possible to observe that sense of simplifying down of not going for what one's usual habits are, and also of spending a lot of time with those people with whom one is creating bonds. It might be that, like, one could spend weekends several weekends before that time gathered in one place and spending time meditating and doing simple type of sharing and eating and living very simply.
Mm-hmm. And then perhaps even during the week, people might take a moment during the day to all tune in with each other.
Right. Everything is in the attitude.
Yes. So in a way, part of what this date involves is you talked about a shift in phase. It's a planetary shift in attitude.
Exactly.
And if enough people do it all at once, then we have the overall shift.
Absolutely.
And what do you see? Okay, in a minute or two, this tape's going to run out,
okay.
So I'll tell you, but then I'll turn it over. But what do you see as the period then immediately following, again, in practical things that people might do? You talk about needing to reach 550,000 people during the 2 days.
Well, actually, the key number for the 2 days is 144,000.
Mm-hmm.
And that those people who that represents the minimum number, of humans who have been able to completely surrender to the Earth and to the higher galactic intelligence. There will be many, many other people tuned in one way or another through different types of celebrations and events that will be occurring at that time. But if the 144,000 minimum number can create this planetary field of trust, then there is actually going to be a type of energy jolt that occurs. And everyone will know that this has happened, because it will be in some ways like when Kennedy was assassinated, and right after the word was out, everybody knew that something had happened. Okay, so it's on that level, except for two things. One, this is global, and two, it's more like what the character in the film 2010 repeat several times over. Something wonderful is going to happen. And it will be the more one is as attuned to this event and this window of time, the more it will be clear that something wonderful indeed has happened. But even to people who are not tuned in to this, they will know that something happened. They might be more perplexed about it, but they will know that something happened, and it will be very evident. It'll be very important for this to there to be alert media people aware of this, so that they can begin to communicate this in the days following the event, and make sure that the information is going out. And there will be lots of different, I think there'll be different breaks in routine that will be occurring. And some of this will seem disruptive in the sense that business isn't going on as usual, but it will also be seen, be perceived that there is a very, very fresh, new, positive force at work, and that it is in the interest of the planet and of humanity to pay attention to this positive force and see what this positive force is beginning to communicate in terms of how we are going about the business of living our lives on this planet.
So in a sense, then, for those who are willing to be open, even for some degree to those who aren't, there will be a perceived or felt sense of a shift.
Yes.
And to the degree to which people are inwardly awakened, they'll have a more and more specific sense of it.
Yes.
Of what it is.
Exactly.
Would you say a little about the American Indian traditions in this regard? And why don't you hold on a minute while I turn the tape over. Okay, hold on a second. A number of the American Indian traditions also speak to this date, and you mentioned a ritual that a Brook Medicine Eagle will be involved in. And in the last issue of Meditation Magazine, John Price referred to the Hopi and the speaking of an actual, awakening of the chakras or the wheels on etheric or non-physical levels.
Right. Yeah, there's, as I mentioned earlier, that the origin point of the date does seem to stem back actually to ancient Mexican traditions. And in recent times there have been a number of people who have picked that up. Not everybody in the Native American world is tuned into this yet. But increasingly, through the efforts of people Brook Medicine Eagle, of Dehani Iwahu, of Harley Swift Deer, and people like this, that there is a growing understanding and awareness of this, of the significance of this date. It seems now to be an increasing understanding that this date obviously coincides with the Hopi prophecies of the purification, and there's a new final dispensation of the Hopi prophecy that is now going out and will be delivered to the United Nations before August. Let me see, I was going to say something else there that slipped my mind, so I'll just let that
Okay, well, we'll just let that come back. So the Hopis have a particular dispensation.
I know what the other thing was. Excuse me, I'll just...
Sure.
That also that this is the point where, in the for instance, in the Hopi prophecies, where we are now going to be passing from what the Hopis refer to as the fourth world to the fifth world.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, when you look at that, it's interesting because in the Hopi telling of it, we pass through successive worlds. We'll be leaving the fourth world, going to the fifth, and that's always described as a passage through the Sipapu, S-I-P-A-P-U, the Sipapu, which is like the, which you might call the interdimensional axis that connects the worlds. And it's just passing through this Sipapu, this interdimensional axis between the worlds, which is what will be occurring on August 16th and 17th.
Mm-hmm.
That the core of humans who are involved and tuned into this will be, in a sense, comprising a human passage between the worlds. And it's, in that regard, it's very important that the people who self-select to be the minimum number, 144,000 humans, that they understand that they are doing this on behalf of humanity and on behalf of the planet.
This is, in fact, an act of service.
Yeah, an act of service so that everyone can come across.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of coming across, something you spoke about in Earth Ascending, without going into the details of the hexagrams, you spoke about a crossing over from history to post-history.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. This is precisely also the point that we are dealing with. We are passing from what I refer to in Earth Ascending as across the corpus callosum of history. And there's only two times when this happens. There's one when we pass from what's usually referred to as prehistory into history, and then when we pass from history again into post-history. And the prehistoric and the post-historic stages refer to those phases of human evolution, or at least Homo sapiens evolutionary development, when the symbiosis with nature is commonly acknowledged and recognized, and that symbiosis, that synthesis with nature, provides the key organizing factor in human life and human society.
Which is, again, recognizing that we are part of a large organism and have our place in it.
Correct.
Rather than imagining, as we have for the last period of time, that we're a separate autonomous organization.
Yeah, that we're not... We're not alone in a inhuman universe. that the notion of being alone in this cold, terrifying, violent universe, which is the popular image, is merely a projection of our own condition of alienation resulting from our creating a belief that separates us from nature.
So part of this phase shift, then, is literally a phase shift from that consciousness of aloneness and alienation to an attitude of recognizing we're a part of a larger living whole.
Yes, to a larger living whole, and that we not only part of a larger living whole, but that we are in a condition of cooperation with this larger living whole of which we are a part. Speaking of the shift from history to post-history, another way of looking at this is that we have been operating, particularly in the last 300 or 400 years with this myth of progress, which has resulted in an acceleration of technology,
mm-hmm.
an acceleration of technology, which has resulted in an acceleration of lifestyle and also of alienation and a breakdown of the traditional social structures. What harmonic convergence signifies in this regard is the passing from a phase of acceleration to synchronization. You could say that acceleration is now reaching an exponential rate. Okay, so that,
mm-hmm.
that the curve goes straight up. Now, when the curve goes straight up, you phase out. It's no longer meaningful.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and so what harmonic convergence represents that moment when the curve of acceleration and progress becomes exponential and phases into something else. And what it phases into is synchronization. In fact, harmonic convergence is a synchronization event.
Mm-hmm.
And the synchronization, the if you would call it that, the ethos of synchronization is a capacity to be in a condition of nowness rather than the myth of progress where we're always looking toward a better future or improving, making a better gadget.
Mm-hmm.
That the primary quality becomes not on something that can be improved upon, but on the quality of nowness, and you could look at harmonic convergence as a synchronization event, that from it larger and larger ripples of nowness spread out until the mental field of the planet is engaged in an ethos of nowness, which brings us all back to the present, which brings us all back to how we are, the quality of how we are in the present, the quality of how we're relating to our environment in the present. And that's a very, very significant kind of change that we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking as I listen to you, because this would be a question people would be interested in as well, that one of the ways perhaps of communicating the significance of this process and involving people in it who might otherwise not respond to some of the language that we're using would be to focus on this quality of nowness in their lives, whatever it might be.
Right. It's a very subtle, in other words, very radical shift to an intensified and renewed appreciation of the simplicity of just living, of everyday living.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one other aspect of that, in terms of looking at going from acceleration to synchronization and nowness, is that synchronization also implies synchronicity.
Mm-hmm.
And along with a intensified and renewed appreciation of the nowness of everyday living is an increase in the intensity and appreciation of synchronicity. And synchronicity actually refers to the psychic bonds, or the bonds of psychic energy, which really connect us not only to each other, but to everything that exists.
Mm-hmm.
And it's from that as we move through the next 20, 25 years, that the role of what we nowadays would refer to as paranormal
mm-hmm.
faculties or qualities or powers will become increasingly, not only increasingly important, but increasingly dominant in the structure and organization of our life and of the planetary life that we are creating.
That in a sense a real science of the spirit will develop.
Yes.
Will no longer be treated
right.
as a strange religious or, you know, occult realm.
Yeah, you might say a genuine science of spirit, a genuine science of mind that is grounded in cosmic principles.
Mm-hmm. So in a way, we're talking about the learning of right human relations on a planetary scale.
That's right. And the interesting and amazing thing is that all the tools that we need have already been developed.
Mm-hmm.
The roles of the great spiritual traditions, the roles of the great spiritual teachers and masters and yogis and shamans and all of that, and mystics, has been to develop the tools, to develop the language, to develop the actual living proof that this is not only possible, but as we know, that these people are the most happy, most joyful, and most enlightened
mm-hmm.
humans of all of us, that this is not just something for rare aberrant mystics or shamans or
mm-hmm.
yogis, but is everyone's birthright.
Mm-hmm.
And the purpose of the long millennia of traditions of development of spiritual techniques is to make available at this time for everyone in this new phase that we're entering into, to make available for everyone these tools, these languages, and these possibilities, so that the fulfillment and the ripening of humanity as a single organism will be the same as the fulfillment and the ripening and enlightenment of those single humans throughout history who have shown that this is not only possible, but this is the natural condition of a human being in the great cosmic sea.
And in a sense, then, what a wonderful thought that each of the religious traditions has been there to provide these, so that everybody can find their own particular tools.
That's right.
And yet they're, in a sense, teaching one truth. And many have said that the truth of this whole solar system is love, is unconditional love.
That's right. And that's a very good way of looking at the different spiritual traditions through history as being the the evolutionary driving forces to provide this knowledge, this information, and this capacity to explore it and to provide it and to make it available. And it's also that the nature of the universe, the goal, and the very nature of it. As being a quality of unconditional love and of unobstructed luminosity
mm-hmm.
and of complete panoramic wakefulness.
Hmm. So one way that we might practically invite people to participate in this time is that to each in their own traditions to enter back into it and see what the heart of their tradition is, but then to look at it not only in terms of their own inner life or their relationship with their neighbors, but begin to apply these concepts to the much larger whole of their relationship from one nation to another, and then the nations as a whole, humanity as a whole, to this great organism, the Earth.
That's right. I remember hearing one of the Hopi spokespeople, Thomas Banyaka, a number of years ago, back in 1972, and he was speaking about the passage from the fourth to the fifth world, and he said that only those who are spiritually strong will survive. And I often thought about that statement, and the truth of it is that it's through utilizing those genuine living spiritual traditions that have been transmitted that we are going to create the foundation for the new order, for the new world that is dawning.
Mm-hmm. So in a sense then, the 5-year period that we're entering into might be an opportunity for everyone to go back to their roots,
yeah.
To do this purification process, recognizing that they're not doing it as individuals or even individual religions, but they're doing it as part of a campaign of the Earth.
That's right. And I think that's a really good point, Alexis, because in the prophecies, this point in time and this period of time is often referred to as the Great Return.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the return, you could look at it as the return to evolutionary mainstream,
mm-hmm.
it's the return to our senses, it's the return to our basic nature, but it's also the return to those traditions that have been developed that are actually nurturing
mm-hmm.
and that can nurture us as we go through, because in some ways, to make the kind of shift that we're talking about, which is a major shift, it can only be done by resorting to our spiritual roots, because what we're dealing with in a kind of a mega metaphor here is that we humanity as a whole has become materialistically addicted, and
mm-hmm.
in the dealing of any addiction, there's a phase where you have to have the you withdraw.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
And the only way that you can sustain yourself initially is through in that kind of situation is through spiritual nurturance, and so that's a really key point. So that the people who self-select to take a lead in this harmonic convergence process should understand that part of their role in the five-year purification period is to model spiritual support and to give spiritual sustenance and nurturance, so that those who might be less attuned and therefore somewhat more perplexed by what will be happening can see that it really is possible to live life without neon lights.
Now, following along this timeline, Jose, this gives us a sense of the great energies that will be released during this two-day period, and then in a sense they'll continue being soaked in over the next 5 years.
Yes.
Now, you spoke of a second phase, regeneration phase, running from 1992 to December 21st, 2012.
Right.
Looking at this in the larger context now, could you say a few words about that time period?
Okay. The 5-year purification period will be like, as I mentioned, destabilization. It's like if you're driving a truck or something, or a car, and you see something, a rampart right in front of you, you have to hit the brakes and turn around. Okay, so that's a lurching type of experience.
It'd be a lot of lurching.
Yeah. So what we're talking about when we get to 1992 is a stabilization. And incidentally, in that 5-year period, I think it would be realistic to anticipate that there will still be certain convulsions of the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You mean in the sense that there's been some talks about the Earth shifting on its axis and earthquakes?
Not so much an axis shift as tectonic plate shifting,
mm-hmm.
the possibilities of further earthquake volcanic activity, possibilities of major portions of the Antarctic ice cap, for instance, slipping into the sea. The,
mm-hmm.
the ozone hole over the Antarctic is not particularly auspicious, in that regard. That there will be some certain what you might call cleansing processes of the
mm-hmm.
Earth. In any case, when we get to 1992, which you're entering as a period of relative stabilization, the 5-year period will be not only purification but a tremendous learning experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so that when we emerge in 1992. And going out to closing out the cycle in 2012, that this period of time will be one in which there will actually be a greater abundance than we have known.
Mm-hmm.
Part of that, it's only logical if you look at it and you see, well, the amount of wealth that is now going into instruments of war and destruction, and that wealth is liberated, you see that we begin to enter into a period of great abundance. And once that wealth, the means for shifting and redistributing that wealth come about, that we enter into a period of a much greater abundance than we have witnessed or known before. In addition, there will be a much greater decentralization and even denationalization process that will be occurring and will be emerging at that time. So you'll have much greater, I guess in some ways along the lines of bioregionalism,
mm-hmm.
even smaller autonomies within bioregions that will be occurring. And in this, you also have to anticipate a very, very different mental frame than is operating right now.
This would be that new mental field that will result from the phase shift.
Yes, exactly. A mental field that's based on the understanding of the unified field is resonance,
mm-hmm.
and that the resonance is the unifying factor in the total field. And so, along with the greater abundance, much smaller autonomous operations within bioregions hooked up through global information networks, that the emphasis will be will increase in a number of ways toward greater what we might call artistic ritual or the greater increasing importance of artistic and ritual activity as the very core and essence of life,
mm-hmm.
that our activities will be much more turning much more in this direction, and that as far as the technology, as it were, that it will be a technology that will be solar technology that will be understanding ways in which energy is liberated through psychic solar resonances,
mm-hmm.
and also through crystals,
mm-hmm.
Will be another major component of what we might call the new psychic solar technology.
Mm-hmm.
As we progress through this period, what we will realize is that we will slowly come to a wireless phase of communication.
Mm-hmm. Mental communication.
We'll get to a purely mental phase,
mm-hmm.
of this. We'll realize that the wires and all that were projections of dormant mental psychic faculties,
mm-hmm.
and that so that when by the time we reach the period, say between the final 5-year period between 2007 and 2012, it will be as if we shall realize that we are the dolphins of the atmosphere.
Yes, yes, wonderful phrase. Mm.
That our what we nowadays call technology will be increasingly stripped down.
Mm-hmm.
And that our functioning in solar psychic resonance will be liberating energies within ourselves and taking care of many of the what we nowadays call our creature comfort needs.
Mm-hmm.
That this will be the final preparation then for the galactic synchronization that occurs on December 21st, 2012, and at that point, then there will be an actual evolutionary shift of major proportions that will be occurring, and in a very definite way, the phase that we refer to as Homo sapiens in the evolutionary scale will be ended at that point, and
mm-hmm.
a new evolutionary stage will. Will occur. It'll be like a massive imprinting that will take place at that time, a galactic imprinting, and then following that, then we will be entering a phase for lack of any better terms, in, mm-hmm. with regard to ourselves as a species, we could call superhuman, that's, say, mm-hmm. beyond what we know as human mm-hmm. now, in which we are functioning as a single organism.
Mm-hmm.
Functioning as a single organism in which our physical which is our third dimensional body, our spirit, our light or dream body, which is our fourth dimensional mm-hmm. body, will be hooked up, and we will then be operating with also with the fifth dimension, which is the plane of the spirit guides or the ascended masters,
mm-hmm.
that we'll be operating as a multi-dimensional organism, and,
mm-hmm.
and through this, not only will we be operating as a single organism, as incomprehensible as that may seem at this moment, but we will also be operating in tandem with other similar organisms throughout the galaxy, at least
mm-hmm.
with six other.
Certainly within the solar system, we
right.
would then, as a unit, begin to relate to other such conscious units.
Right. Correct.
Mm-hmm. And then looking at the sort of the larger picture then, the period we're entering into right now is a purification phase that prepares us to end a very, very large cycle.
Yes.
Which in turn prepares us to be able to hold the tremendous infusion of energy that will happen when you have the systemic alignment of seven solar systems in 2012.
Right.
That will bring in so much energy that we as a living organism or, part of this planet, need to prepare ourselves to be able to hold the energy that will come in, which will in turn enable a permanent evolutionary shift into another phase.
That's absolutely, you said it very well.
Is that sort of, I'm trying to kind of
yeah.
sum up the sense of this.
Yes.
Now this this raises one other question, Jose, that there's one of the things that happens when you see this sort of thing going on is tremendous polarization. And one of the things we're witnessing in the world today is just taking the New Age or the religious traditions, if the fundamentalist traditions, be they a Muslim or a Christian or Buddhist or Jewish, are at the same time also having a tremendous growth in numbers.
Yes.
And it seems to me that there are both a lot of world governments and many religious traditions that are strongly resisting this. How can we, recognizing these people as our brothers and sisters, help them during this kind of transitional phase? Because it strikes me as being tremendously polarizing.
Yes, and the polarization, which is actually a natural and inevitable
mm-hmm.
process, okay, will continue certainly up to harmonic convergence. Following that, however, that's why I said that those of us who self-select into this have to understand the spiritual basis of our doing so.
Mm-hmm.
It's important at this time that we recognize that we not be naive, and that we recognize the polarization, and that this is a necessary and inevitable part of this. This kind of process, and at this time, well, it's important that we offset as much as we can this polarization through the cultivation of really genuine, universal, selfless compassion.
Mm-hmm.
That's really, really a very, very key guide and factor in all of this. And that this sense of universal selfless compassion obviously follows through in the aftermath of harmonic convergence. But the shift will create a very different situation, obviously,
mm-hmm.
Going into the latter part of this year, and the polarization in some ways will be much more erratic, in some ways much more heightened, in other ways much more subdued. The key thing also, in addition to the cultivation of universal selfless compassion, is the understanding of the some of the basic cosmic laws. And the second there's three of these laws. The first one is that in the circle of perfection all the dimensions of being are inseparably united, that we're not really separate at all.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a mental illusion. Second of all, that all polarity is resolved in resonance. And that gets us back to that, and that's what we're talking about here.
Could you speak a little more about all polarity being resolved in resonance?
Yeah, that any polarity comes about because there is a break in the original contract. The original contract is in the circle of perfection, the dimensions of being are inseparably united. An illusion that this is not so creates a break in the field. A break in the field creates polarization of some kind. Now, the universe operates as many different levels of frequencies, okay, of resonances and frequencies.
Mm-hmm.
And when we're dealing with a situation of polarization, and to deal with it intelligently, what you do is you work to create a higher level of frequency, which then entrains the seemingly opposing element.
So practically speaking then, in terms of the polarization we see both between, you know, quote-unquote New Age versus fundamentalist religions and between different forms of governments, is this through the practice of selfless compassion we begin to create a wider circle that can include the two sides of the polarization?
That's right. It'll create a wider circle, and within that wider circle, to continue to cultivate our own resonance and to attune our resonance to the planetary resonance and to the galactic resonance, so that you hit a new frequency, and that new frequency then entrains the polarized components.
So once enough of that is built up, it'll just kind of carry, so to speak. And in terms of cultivating our own resonance, something you had spoken of earlier to me that was of great interest in terms of geomancy, as you spoke of us as being like individual acupuncture points or needles, you know, along the larger body of the planet. Can you say something about the role of geomancy and, you know, our recognizing our relationship to the Earth in regard?
Geomancy is is fundamental if we are going to be looking at the Earth as a resonant field and ourselves as individual resonating units or acupuncture needles. Okay,
mm-hmm.
as we stable in the process of purifying and stabilizing the Earth, it will become increasingly and even universally apparent that part of the restabilization of the environment is how we put ourselves in harmony and in resonance with the environment. And we will begin to see that knowledge and memory are actually functions of our capacity to come into and remain in resonance with the Earth at different particular places, and that in different particular places, different aspects of knowledge and memory unfold.
Mm-hmm. So then part of what's ahead of us then is to learn a little bit about what those places might be and to establish right relationship with them.
Yes.
Is there any body of work that refers to that interested people might look at, or would you want to comment on that further?
Yeah, there's nothing there are a number of different approaches that are being developed and taken right now. The work of John Michel, for instance, the New View over Atlantis, the geomancy, the traditional forms of Chinese geomancy, presented by Skinner in his the Living Earth Manual. A number of different people are taking, you know, developing a kind of what you might call planetary geomancy. There have been, local specific traditions of geomancy up to this period of time, but now we are looking at the emergence of a type of planetary geomancy. And I think that particularly through the five-year purification period, that we will see the emergence of a type of Earth geomancy council that will be working with the say, for instance, the METEORCHY or the Planetary Information Council. That will be very critical in terms like of the relocation of people and of the redistribution of wealth and the reorganization of human society in relationship to the Earth, so that humans in proper relation, in right relation to the Earth, will then be able to assist the Earth in maximizing her conscious energy potential in preparation for the galactic synchronization.
Now this is going to involve as well, back to our dealing with the polarizations in the second of the cosmic laws you referred to, fairly massive shift in terms of how things are handled economically.
Yes.
Can you address that at all in terms of what we might do practically? Because the structure, ever since the Iron Mountain report came out, it became apparent that the structure of at least our economy and probably the Soviets as well is basically a war economy.
Yes. Yeah, we're talking about a shift from, well, the war economy and the fossil fuel industrial economy are very, very closely related. It doesn't take too much thinking to see that, why, for instance, we have such an interest in the Persian Gulf. So what we're talking about is a major takedown, part in the interim period, in the purification period, the army, the people's army of the Earth will be the organization of humans to begin to both clean up the environment and take down the polluting industries. That in itself is job creating. Okay. Once we've reached stabilization, then also, as I mentioned, you always have to keep in mind this shift in the whole mental field, that we'll be looking at a much simpler, more simplified economic modes and models that I'll take us almost back to early agrarian. So we're dealing with what you might call agro-informational economy, in which the two key factors will be the agriculture information processing. And along with that, then, just as in the early agrarian economies, that there was a capacity to displace abundant or surplus wealth on behalf of what we might today call our artistic environmental projects, that similar type of thing will then be occurring, as we will begin to see geomantically our place within the planetary field, and begin to, in a sense, environmentally architect ourselves back into the field.
And how might one, again, I'm thinking, for instance, I'm going to be going to Washington in a couple of weeks to a meeting of the National Peace Institute Foundation. How might one begin to practically communicate this, say, to Washington or to Moscow or to Peking?
Well, that's a very good question. It's a hard one, because in some ways it's hard to put new wine in old bottles.
Yes.
Okay. And so I think it's very important that people understand a break in the field. It's like a circuit when you break a circuit. Okay. A break in the field is about to occur. And that in preparation for this, to utilize existing human group bonding and intensify our intentions for cooperation and supporting us, supporting each other through groups.
So then, in a way, a key part of that would be back to what you referred to was so crucial, which is the cultivation of selfless compassion, of unconditional love, that we should, through cooperative relationships with those men and women who, you know, between us, we cover the, you know, we touch the whole world with all the various people, bring those qualities into that, into those relationships, whether these people be military people or religious fundamentalists or whatever. And that if each individual and each group concentrates on this, then there'll be that kind of fostering of that attitude, that intention.
That's correct. That's absolutely correct.
Okay, because that's a, well, again, I'm thinking that very recently Dr. Edith Stauffer has written a book called Unconditional Love and Forgiveness that speaks very practically towards applying these principles.
Yes.
So it's a matter of really beginning to live in terms of being now, to live this where we are, and perhaps especially in our relationships with the, I hesitate to use the word the old order, but, you know, as we make this shift, it's, mm-hmm. it's going to be very difficult for a fairly large group of people.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's correct. I think that the, I'd say along with unconditional love and forgiveness,
mm-hmm.
One third quality comes in there, and that's, non-judgmental.
Mm-hmm.
With that as much as possible, we suspend judgment.
To really see the good in others, then,
right.
Including the people who may appear to us to be on the other side of such a shift.
Correct.
A couple more minutes here.
Okay.
You had mentioned a third cosmic law.
Okay, the third cosmic law is what the law of karma and dharma.
Okay, could you translate that for people?
Okay, so that in other words, that when we make a break and create a polarization or what we, you know, might call duality, we set up a chain of events attacking as a field of events, and this field is the karma, that is what we call karma, okay,
mm-hmm.
which is then that's what we live in, we cultivate, and we develop, depending upon our ignorance or our propensity to enlightenment. This field becomes even more complicated, and so on, and so in. In terms of cosmic science, or just developing a cosmic perspective, we are born into a field of karma, and our realization of being born into a field of karma automatically then induces us toward those actions which correct karma, and the actions which correct karma are called dharma,
mm-hmm.
or dharmic action. In other words, like just to go back to putting it really simply, that the law of karma dharma is that karma are those actions which create further negativity and negative field, and dharma are those actions which correct the negativity, overcome the negativity, and create a more wholesome field. Dharma is always related to a sense of universal law of basic universal goodness, which of which there is a bottomless supply.
So, in a sense, then, during the regeneration phase that we're referring to, leading to the evolutionary shift, the learning and teaching of these three cosmic laws of, right, I don't want to say human relations, right, relationships between living consciousnesses, is what needs to be, you know, learned and taught.
Right. And then I think that the learning we'll be having in the purification phase will start off with learning of our karma,
mm-hmm.
and learning of how to resolve polarity through resonance.
Mm-hmm.
And as we move through the final 20-year phase to 2012, we'll be to restore ourselves to that natural circle of perfection where all the dimensions of being are inseparably united.
Mm-hmm. And then when that happens, we in turn will be functioning on a frequency where we can, as a unit, move beyond both the consciousness of this planet and of the solar system to, as you put it in Earth Ascending, entering the galactic community.
Yes.
What a wonderful vision.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's worth getting it out.
It sure is. It sure is.
Well, listen, Alexis, mm-hmm. As soon as you have a transcript or copy of whatever this comes down to, if you could please send it to me.
Yes, absolutely.
And when will the magazine be published?
The magazine will be published on June 1st.
Okay, great.
And the thought is that as soon as they have this thing down, it will go to you for any corrections,
okay.
additions, deletions, or, you know, whatever you want to do
okay.
with it.
Good.
And
well,
then
you've done an excellent job, Alexis.
Well, I'll tell you, it's such a joy to talk about this with you, Jose. In fact, I can't resist, for the record, since it was initially brought us together, say something about William Blake.
And about
the planet
William Blake?
You referred to him once as the priest of the planetization of consciousness.
As the priest of the what? Planetization?
Planetization of consciousness in all of this.
Yeah, William Blake was a guiding light and luminary as we entered what he called the dark mills of Satan.
Mm-hmm.
And he remains a beacon, and I know that I myself was able to relight my torch from his when it seemed that my flame was dwindling.
Well, amen to that.
Okay.
So I'll let you go, Jose. Thank you so much.
Love and blessings to you on this Ash Wednesday, Alexis.
Yes, okay. And to you and to Lord Dean, Jose.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.